Summer is always full of fun. And this summer, FanDuel has something for every baseball fan every day to make it even funner. Is that a word? It is now. All customers get a boost or a bonus every day, all summer long, only on FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. 21 plus and present in Ohio. Opt-in required. Wager requirements apply. Bonuses awarded as non-withdrawable bonus bets or profit boost tokens. Restrictions apply, including bonus expiration. See terms and conditions at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
HD Smartcast.
You are listening to a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello, welcome to our podcast, The Signal
and the Noise,
that will attempt to give you a peek into the inner workings of Mint's long story. This is Sunit.
And I am Ajay.
And we are both editors with Mint.
Every week, either one of us will attempt to walk you through the most defining development in the world of business, politics, or technology.
Let's dive in. Hi, this is Sunit, and it's the day after the Union Budget. My guest today will help us decode the government's annual statement of accounts and economic intention. Mohit Satyanand is a man of many parts. He's an entrepreneur, portfolio investor, angel investor, economy watcher. He also likes theatre, cross-country cycling and the mountains. Satyanand writes too. He penned a few long stories for Mint on the stock market, which he follows closely along with macroeconomic indicators. Let's find out what Satyanand has to say about a budget that, in sharp variance to recent years, seems to have received universal praise.
Hi Mohit, good to have you on board on The Signal and the Noise.
My pleasure, Sunit.
This is the day after the budget. So, given that the stage was already set with the PM announcing his mini budgets in the run up to this and the lackluster record of the finance minister's previous budgets and particularly various conferences we've seen over the pandemic year, everyone seems to be pleasantly surprised. First, I'm going to start with an overview and the larger picture, then we can drill down into dynamics. What's your reaction, overall reaction?
So I think that it's been a tremendous relief, really, because markets had sold off over the week before the budget. And I think that people were taking precautions, because though the finance minister said that this is going to be a dream budget and all the usual hyperbole that governments are capable of, people thought that there would be some kind of additional tax mobilization measures. There seemed to be a general, almost consensus that there would be some effort to tax the super rich, that there would be some kind of one-time cess, etc., etc., etc. So people were taking some money off the table. Instead, none of it happened. No additional tax mobilization measures. And except for some amount of additional import duties, which is part of the general trend towards protectionism, which is completely anchored in the Atmanirbhar Bharat slogan. My only point is that this was a big relief, Randy, that there were no additional tax mobilizations.
I understand. Now, suppose we just step away from the market reaction for a bit. From an economic philosophy point of view and how you read the budget vis-a-vis some of the reform measures that have been announced, particularly vis-a-vis implementation and what the past track record has been, what is your verdict on this budget? There's been some stuff on insurance. There's been a lot of noise about privatization, which, of course, we have.
Yeah, okay. So I'm happy to talk about those, Sunit. The track record, of course, in terms of mobilizing resources from existing assets has been abysmal for all governments. And it's partly political and it's partly implementational. It's almost as though there's a reluctance in the machinery to actually let go. So you can make a statement, a political statement, but it just doesn't translate into getting the documents out on time, putting together the nitty-gritty of sales, mobilizing adequate potential buyers. I mean, we've been talking about Air India Sale for the last decade at least. I think the one new thing over here, and that's very welcome, is to talk about monetizing land. And anybody who's been around this country knows how much surplus land the government holds. And I think that if there's a political will to do this, this is great. It won't make the real estate lobby happy, but that's irrelevant. And, you know, if you look at it from a political economy point of view, then this is land is owned by the people of India. Right. The government is only an instrument. And why should this land, which is owned by the people of India, be sitting in the idle hands of the government? It doesn't make sense. I think that's fantastic. But this government has not had any extra abilities beyond previous governments to convert the stated intent of converting assets owned by the government into cash. It's not been able to do it in 6 years. Other governments have not done it. And therefore, if you look at it from the point of view of resource mobilization, to move from a 9.5% deficit for the current financial year down to 6.5% next year, a lot of that is going to depend on the ability to convert some of these intents into practice. I don't think the nature of the administration is suddenly going to change overnight to make this possible. So that makes me look at all of this makes one look at these things with a lot of skepticism.
Buckets of salt. I think you've hit one nail on the head. What you're basically trying to say is, given the statist nature of this administration, shedding land and other assets is we have to actually see the proof of it before we can start celebrating. Is that broadly what you're saying, right?
I'm actually saying, I concur with that, Sunit. I'm actually saying one more thing, which is that, you know, in the ultimate analysis, it is the bureaucrats who put together the documents and need to make something happen. Because a minister can say this needs to be done, but even the very phrasing of one sentence in a sale document can make that sale difficult to happen. And what is the incentive for bureaucrats to let go? How hard can, you know, so statist, I just wanted to clarify that statist is embedded not just in the politicians, but also in the senior bureaucrats.
Absolutely.
And
I get that.
Nobody wants to let go.
Let's move on to some of the other things. Of course, there was insurance, then there was a bad bank, there was a big debate. And the financial sector, there has been some people have been talking about these, suggesting these reforms. What do you feel about
that? You know, I think, insurance is very simple, which is to say that you raise the FDI limit from 49% to 74%. I think that's a good thing. And it will certainly help bring in money from abroad. You know, we know the data. India is uninsured. Globally, insurance companies sit on vast amounts of float. Warren Buffett is largely rich because he always had cash flow from insurance company, etc. So I think that's a good thing. Completely unmitigated positive with absolutely no negatives attached to it. Bad bank. Very, very complex. How long are you going to take to set it up? And does it really change anything? More importantly, does it actually create moral hazard? And this is what we've seen time and time again in India. You know, it's just another way of extending and pretending. You're you are at a particular point in time, you can say, look, this is going to help bank managers focus on the future rather than deal with the past. In that sense, a bad bank is a good idea because you take the need to dispose of bad assets off their table and you give it to a specialized organization. But then how do you deal with the fact that time and time again, in conditions of low interest and booms, that you encourage bad banking? How do you deal with the moral hazard issue? We've not been able to answer that question. In a sense, we are still dealing with the excesses of the global financial crisis in India, 12 years down the line. Other countries dealt with it in 2 or 3 years. You know? So you need pretty hard steps to deal with these behavioral issues in banking. And I think a bad bank, though it may stall this kind of, it may help banks move over this hump, but it's not dealing with the behavioral issue which lies at the heart of banking, which is just crassly bad financial allocation.
Right. Moving on, Mohit, to infrastructure and basically the attempt by the government to put some money into construction, infrastructure, and get the economy going and jobs going. What is your verdict from the budget? What are the signals that you read?
Yeah, so this is, I think, getting to the heart of the budget. If you just read the headline, which is that we're going to increase CapEx massively, that's a great thing because we have seen very low investments in the economy. If you look, the private sector is not going to make investments, which in my view are the engine of growth of an economy, because their capital utilization is running low, it's below 70%. And typically you don't see fresh private sector investments coming in until their capacity utilization crosses 80%. So where's the investment going to come in from? So you say the government gets in and does CapEx. That's absolutely wonderful. And that's always been the role of governments, or to quote our finance minister, of kings. I hate that imperial reference because we're supposed to be a democracy. But nevertheless, in recessions they build palaces. But
we have our central vista.
But that apart, you know, that apart, if you say you're going to pump in an extra amount in terms of CapEx, that's a good thing. But the point is, Sunit, that total government spending is not budgeted to go up in FY22 compared to FY21. Mm-hmm. Therefore, what you're saying is that we will move, inter se, some of our expenditure from revenue expenditure to CapEx. This then raises the question of where the demand is going to come into the economy from. Because we know that at least 15 million people have lost their jobs. We know that the corporate sector has been able to make do with fewer jobs and therefore pump up their profitability. So if you are going to take money away from revenue expenditure, and we've seen that, for example, in MNREGA, which is the Rural Employment Guarantee Program. The funds budgeted to it next year come down from the funds budgeted this year.
Absolutely.
So where's the demand revival in the economy going to come back from? You've dropped that by 50,000 crores. So you're saying that we are going to make CapEx available, but not in addition to revenue expenditure, instead of revenue expenditure. And there, one gets a sense that despite what the economic survey might have indicated or suggested, which is that we need to be bold about incurring deficits, and that if we can generate growth, then deficits will take care of themselves in the long run, it seems as though this budget is doing the opposite. It's saying, you know, willy-nilly, under COVID, we have to get into a 9.5% deficit. Now, let's bring it down next year to 6.5%. And therefore, you are, in effect, withdrawing stimulus from the economy. This cannot be a good thing. You know, I'm sure the government has thought of various issues and they're concerned about their ability to mobilize more funds, what it's going to do to bond yields, etc. And yesterday, certainly, we saw bonds sell off. We saw bond yields go up by 16 or 17 basis points, which is not great.
Yeah. You raised a very important point about where's the demand going to come from. And I think at the end of the day, the consumer, Indian consumer is almost in a shock-like state and continues to be so, has been so since demonetization. By not taxing the Indian consumer and adding to his or her burden, the FM has spared them. But is there an impetus for demand revival?
There isn't, and that's my concern.
Right. The capacity addition that we're talking about will hopefully generate some job and we'll see some demand coming from those segments. But there'll be a lag effect here, right?
There'll be a massive lag effect. But the question, you don't say I'm going to incur capital expenditure coming year and start tomorrow. Projects have to be what economists call shovel ready. And that takes a long time. You need to have the project in view. You need the land acquisition to take place. The plans have to be drawn up. The civil engineers have got to work at them. Tenders have to be floated, etc., 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 etc. It takes a long time for intent to translate into expenditure, jobs, etc., etc., etc. So here again, I'm taking these plans with a little bit of skepticism. The intent is strong. And I must say that having been driving around the country for the last 6 weeks, as you know, I'm on a driving holiday right now, I see that highway construction work is abyss. So I'm less skeptical about this than I am about many other things. I think there is a strong intent. But if it's coming at the expense of support for the most vulnerable people in the economy, then concern about whether we are going to see demand revival.
Okay, perfect. Moving to Atmanirbhar, you said it's good for industry. I feel Indian consumer pays the price. So, quick thoughts there.
Of course we do. Listen, if you've grown up in the 60s and 70s as I have, you know what protectionism means. It means high prices, it means
lack of choice.
Products, and it means lack of choice, and it means extra normal profits for those businesses which are supported and protected by these barriers. It also opens the roads for all kinds of crony capitalism and snug relationships between certain sectors and politicians and so on and so forth. We've seen this movie before and it never plays out well.
So then why are you positive?
No, I'm only positive as an investor for those particular businesses which are supported by
clients. I understand.
Not as a consumer and not as a watcher of the economy. It's an unmitigated disaster. Protectionism is bad news.
I get that. Moving on to the markets where, of course, the markets have soared and we started our talk with that. And you have famously, in a piece for Mint, said that you don't understand how crazy these valuations are and you're sitting it out. Of course, you've also said you've invested abroad, that you've caught that trend early on. So how do you see the markets now and what's your sense here?
More of the same, Sunit. They've become more and more overpriced. I'm talking about at the aggregate level. There always will be companies to invest in, but at the aggregate level, the markets are getting more and more disconnected with reality. Mm-hmm. And the way I see it is that, once again, there's nothing new in markets. If you research market history, you see this particular movie before. And this movie is the movie of liquidity. And that liquidity is largely being funded by the US Fed and other Western central banks. And my logic is very simple, which is that if the taps turn off, then it's the areas which are furthest away which will dry up first. And we are there. We are furthest away. And therefore, if I'm saying I'm going to benefit from this tap of liquidity, then I'd rather be closer to the tap. And therefore, I'd rather be in US and UK markets than in India markets, especially given the fact that our valuations are so ridiculously high at the aggregate level right now. Mm.
Okay, final question, since looping back to your Atmanirbhar and as an investor. So, I mean, there are various categories of products, including the humble nut. screw, etc., all parts of elements of Make in India, which where custom duties have been raised. So broadly, what segments do you see will benefit of Indian industry will benefit from this budget?
Sunit, very frankly, that's not a question that I'm able to answer right now, because I need to get into the details, and I've been on the road, so I haven't been able to examine specific duty provisions. And that requires a lot of detailed work, because you need to look at that specific business, you need to look at the capacity utilization, the margin, what's happening to commodity prices, etc. That's not a statement I'm going to make easily, but I would certainly look to see whether there's value in infrastructure stock, because clearly a lot of investment is going to happen up there. But I think they're already overvalued. That game has already been played for the last couple of years. So I'm not sure how much additional value there is to the upside. In any case, you know, that's getting so specific that I'm not going to make a statement without having done my homework of looking at balance sheets and P&L.
Sure. Great. Thank you, Mohit. That was an enriching discussion, and I hope your trip today goes off well. And look forward
Thanks very much, Sunit. And
look forward to speaking to you soon and meeting you when you're back in Delhi.
My pleasure, Sunit. See you
Thank
soon.
You.
Bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to The Signal and the Noise. We would love to hear from you. Reach out to us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram on @HTSmartcast.
Or you can also reach out to us personally at Sunit Arora
and @AJAxiom. To listen to more such interesting podcasts, do log on to htsmartcast.com.
We'll be back next week with a new story, another fresh voice, or a unique take on the world.
Do stay well until then, and keep supporting good journalism.
This was a Mint production brought to you by HT Smartcast.
HT Smartcast.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
Now, y'all know I love McDonald's for a quick meal, especially if I'm out and about with the boys and need something to eat. I like food, and y'all know I like saving money, too. Did you know that you can save money with deals in the McDonald's app every single day? Yeah, you heard that right. There's a deal every day in the app. So if you are an avid McDonald's goer like me, you'll find the best value for your buck by using the app. One of my favorite things about the app is the ability to order ahead. So let's say I'm on the road, just picked up Axel from school, and know I promised him some McDonald's fries and a sundae, but don't want to have to wait in that long line. I open up the app and just place my order there. Then I can walk in and pick up my order when it's ready, no wait needed, especially if I time it right. And I love that you can also get a bunch of deals in the app as well. I just logged in and can get a free Big Mac with a minimum purchase of $1. But check it every day, because the deals are always changing. Plus, make sure to share your birthday so McDonald's can celebrate with you with something special. Dream drivers save money with the McDonald's app. Nope, you must opt into rewards.